Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On this show, we're taking revenge against the people who killed Keanu Reeves' dog. We're going to connect with the dead with Ouija. We're going to see old superhero actors acting with new superhero actors in Birdman. We're going to be talking about Dear White People. And since it's Halloween time, we have to have a horror movie in there, too. I don't know if a Ouija counts. So let's talk about Dead Snow 2, Red vs. Dead. Then we're also going to be talking about news and the trailer park and box office predictions, DVD roundup. All this stuff's happening this week. Hold on to your seats. We're getting ready to go. But before we start, let's talk about how to get in touch with me. If you want to email me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or on facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. If you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr. Let's talk about the news, Ron Burgundy.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
All right, we're jumping right in because there's a bunch of little stories I just want to kind of point out, but there's a bigger thing that I kind of want to rant about, and we'll go next. Here's the first just sort of like rundown of development news. The first thing is Disney has let go of the rights of the John Carter of Mars series. This is, of course, the well-known flop from a couple of years ago, which wasn't as big of a flop. The reason it was such a flop was because it had a very low domestic box office, and it was such an expensive movie. It was like $250 million or more to do, and it just didn't even come close to recouping that. If it was made for $70 million, it would have been a hit. But Disney doesn't want to touch it anymore. Anyone else can pick it up. I'm wondering if the WB can pick it up and then just make a better TV series out of it. I'd love to see more John Carter movies. I don't think we're going to see any in the near future. Give it 10, 15 years and they might do more with a different studio. Disney's washed its hands. They're not going to do it ever again. They've got Star Wars and Marvel. They don't need to worry about John Carter. Christian Bale is going to be starring as Steve Jobs in a biopic directed by Danny Boyle, which just those people involved on its own means it's going to be better than Jobs, the Ashton Kutcher starring biopic about Steve Jobs. And nothing wrong with Ashton Kutcher. Jobs wasn't a terrible movie. It was just a TV movie masquerading as a theatrical feature. Cabin Fever, the Eli Roth film, is getting remade from the exact same script. And it's ridiculous because this movie's only like a dozen years old. And yeah, I guess you could remake a dozen-year-old movie. But going from the same script, that just reeks of the Psycho remake from the 90s, where they said, we're just going to use the exact same shooting script and make a crappier version of Alfred Hitchcock's film. Pee-wee Herman has come out and teased the fact that there might be a new Pee-wee Herman movie, which would be great. I mean, Paul Reubens as Pee-wee Herman came out. I would like to see that happen. I mean, I think it's a shame what happened to him, where he sort of lost his face by getting arrested for diddling himself at an adult movie theater. This is pre-internet. This is what people had to do, even if they were celebrities. And then finally, the last piece of development news, The Conjuring 2 is going to be moved to a release of 2016, which means James Wan should be done with Fast and Furious 7 in time to do Conjuring 2. So he's going to be directing Conjuring 2, which is great because Wan is a great horror director. This is probably the shortest retirement from horror movies I've ever seen in my life. But hey, it's great to see him back. I like James Wan's stuff for the most part. Some of his movies aren't good. Dead Silence wasn't that great. But I mean, like the Conjuring and the Insidious, I love his take on modern horror and his revitalization of it. Now, to the big piece that has been occupying a lot of discussion this week. Renee Zellweger had appeared at the Elle Women in Hollywood Awards in Beverly Hills earlier this week. And not a whole lot of people realized it was Renee Zellweger because she looks like a completely different person. If you look at her, she looks like this weird hybrid of like, you know, Robin Wright and, you know, maybe Sarah Jessica Parker. But the bottom line, she does not look like Renee Zellweger at all. And there's been a lot of talk. People are saying, oh, she doesn't look the same. And this is what happens when you get too much plastic surgery. And there's been all that complaint that way. And then you had this backlash where people are like going, don't give her crap. She's just trying to, it's Hollywood's view of women and you just struggle to survive. And so then there was a backlash against people. Now there's a backlash against the backlash against the backlash where it's like, no, this is important. Renee Zellweger then was interviewed by People and she's like, well, perhaps I do look different. But who doesn't look different as they get older? Here's the thing, though. You don't look that different after 5 years, unless you've had a major accident and total reconstructive surgery. Okay? It's one thing to look at somebody when they were a teenager and then see them 20 years later and be like, wow, you look very different. Well, that happens. I mean, go on Facebook. Look at all the people you went to high school with. They're going to look very different. Some of them look kind of the same, but it's not uncommon to not see somebody for 20 years and have them look different. This is a woman who, like, last was seen in a movie 5 years ago. And 10 years before that, she didn't change. She had a very, she had the sort of the squinty face, which was kind of her trademark. And she doesn't look anything like herself. And I don't know if it's plastic surgery or if it's just Botox or whatever it is. She doesn't look bad, but she just looks different. And a lot of people are comparing it to Jennifer Grey. When Jennifer Grey, she got her nose job. And yeah, Jennifer Grey looked better with a new nose. I'll be the first one to admit that. But she lost any sort of marketability of herself. She had to, like, introduce herself. She had to tell people who she was in auditions because nobody knew who Jennifer Grey was because the girl with the big nose from Dirty Dancing is no longer in existence. Well, here's the other thing. People aren't out there saying she looks ugly or that she looks bad. They just say she looks different. And there are people, oh, well, it's just women. No, 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 men do. I mean, how many people complained about the wacky look of Michael Jackson before he died? How many people go out there and point out what a freak Kenny Rogers or Wayne Newton looks like now with his plastic surgery? This doesn't count. You can't pull the sexism card on this. This is vanity of Hollywood and the ignorance of people who get this plastic surgery thinking it looks good. I watch stuff all the time with my wife on TV and I'm like, what's wrong with that person's face? And in what universe does that look good? You have everybody going, oh no, this looks good. And you have your entourage. And this is the problem when you're a celebrity, you surround yourself with yes men and they'll tell you whatever you want to hear. Oh no, you look beautiful. That looks great. Oh yeah, the duck lips looks perfect. It looks totally normal when it doesn't. When, like, Joan Rivers, before she died, I mean, her face, I don't think her face is going to deteriorate in the coffin. That's going to be left. You know, they're going to dig her up, exhume the body in 100 years, and it's going to be just the plastic face of Joan Rivers. This is not a woman versus man thing, because, again, Wayne Newton, Kenny Rogers, Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson, I think he's buried. I don't know if he got cremated. But if he's buried, again, there's going to be a shell of Michael Jackson that's going to be like, you know, a Twinkie that never dissolved in a landfill. So, yeah, Renee Zellweger looks different. And yes, people do age. You shouldn't look that different. So Renee Zellweger has kind of possibly ruined her career, whatever she had, because she hasn't been in a movie for 5 years. So, no, she's not going to be in another movie because nobody, if they want, they can get Robin Wright now because she looks exactly the same and probably is cheaper. Listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr, and that sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Two big trailers dropped this week. The first one is the biggest trailer probably ever in the history of the universe to come out, at least for a 2015 release, and that is The Avengers Age of Ultron, which opens next May 1st.
It's the end. The end of the path I started us on.
Nothing lasts forever.
Not a whole lot to say because it's a teaser trailer, and that's good. I'm not a big fan of some of these Marvel trailers because they reveal too much. The big thing in this one is you get to see the Hulk busting armor for Iron Man, which of course means Iron Man's back, even though he blew up all his suits in Iron Man 3. The guy's so rich he can just make more. So Avengers 2 looks great. I mean, it just looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I want to try and stay away from the marketing as much as possible simply because I don't want stuff spoiled, and trailers tend to do that. The next movie I want to talk about is Insidious 3, which opens on May 29th, also next summer.
Surprise!
Hey.
I'm so sorry this happened to you. I sent some flowers.
We got them.
Great neighbors we have, huh? Crazy cat lady on one side and a kid who's clearly in love with you on the other.
With me. It goes back to a prequel. You got Lin Shaye reprising her role as the Ghost Hunter. And I look forward to this. This one looks good. It's not directed by James Wan, but I think it's going to be creepy. It's going to be going to the heart and soul from the first movie. That's it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, we're going to be talking about Ouija and Birdman.
Yeah.
back to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the movie reviews. We've got five movies to talk about. Let's talk about the horror movie, kind of horror movie for the week, and that is Ouija. A group of friends try to make contact with a friend of theirs that has died, inadvertently connecting with malevolent spirits.
You ever feel like even after someone you love has died, there's still a way you can talk to them?
You want to talk to Debbie?
Yeah.
I wanted to get this on camera. I found something in my house. Weird things started happening as soon as I found the board.
Debbie found the board in her house. She woke something up.
It's coming through all of us.
How do we stop this?
You have to break the connection, or it will keep coming for you.
I don't play with Ouija boards. Now, I don't necessarily believe that they contact spirits or not, but here's my take on Ouija boards, why I don't mess with them. If this is, in fact, a way to connect with spirits, the spirits that are hanging around probably aren't the best ones to be connecting with. So I've never got into this. And I remember when Hasbro released the Ouija board game. I mean, Ouija board and spirits boards have been around for hundreds of years. And Hasbro, I think it was in the 80s that they made this Ouija game. And that's what this is based on. This is actually based on Hasbro. It's not just a Ouija board. It's based on the Hasbro version of Ouija. Yeah, from the creators of Transformers and Battleship comes Ouija, the movie. This film is from Michael Bay's Platinum Dunes group, which did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre awful remake. And I think didn't they do Amityville Horror? They did a whole bunch of remakes. They've been doing remakes, and now they're mining more Hasbro material. I'm not going to say that Ouija is a bad movie. It's not particularly good. But I mean, it's not like Texas Chainsaw, which just sort of destroyed a great movie. Well, the movie's still there. The original Texas Chainsaw is still there. But the remake of Texas Chainsaw, the first one with Jessica Biel, is just stupid. But Ouija is, it's complete and utter milquetoast, white bread, suburban white teenagers doing stupid things kind of horror movie. It is what I like to refer to as slumber party scary. There is not a thing in this movie, aside from just maybe if you can get startled by something. Jump scares don't count as being scary, by the way. Because anybody can do jump scares. If I can come around the corner when my kids or my wife's in the room, she doesn't realize I'm there, I can go boo and I can scare her, but there's nothing scary about that. Startling somebody is not scary, and this just relies on a lot of startling. And it's not a bad movie, it's very formulaic, it's exactly what you'd expect. It's PG-13, so nothing overtly violent or really all that terrifying happens. There are movies that get rated R for just being scary. Like, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. I think The Conjuring also falls into that category, although there's some other content in there that's a little bit violent. But Ouija is... I didn't hate it. It's so funny because, I mean, I love horror movies, and it's just like, I've seen horror movies in October that have sucked. But this one just... That's my review. It's like, well, what did you think of a Ouija? Yeah, in the end, Ouija... kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Okay. Anyways, it just sort of takes the wind out of my sails. This wasn't a movie that was great. It wasn't terrible. It runs 90 minutes. You're in and you're out. So it doesn't overstay its welcome. It's just not particularly good. It's forgettable. It's, you know, I think by Thanksgiving, people are going to forget this movie even existed. All right, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film, Birdman. This is in limited release, and it's rolling out currently. A former superhero actor, played by a former superhero actor, tries to do some serious acting in a movie about doing some serious acting.
We had it all. You were a movie star, remember?
Who was this guy?
He used to be Birdman.
I like that poster.
You wrote this adaptation?
I did, yeah.
And you're directing and starring in your adaptation. That's ambitious.
Are you afraid people will say you're doing this play to battle the impression that you're a washed-up comic strip character?
Now you're about to destroy what's left of your career. You know I'm right.
As you can tell from my blurb, it's a very meta movie. And in fact, it plays off the fact that Michael Keaton was Batman and turned down Batman for the third movie, which, of course, everybody who's talking to the people who are in Birdman are talking about their superhero history. So there's a scene in there where Michael Keaton, former Batman, is having an argument with Edward Norton, former Incredible Hulk, and also dealing with Emma Stone, who was in the Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man movies. It kind of gets so meta, and everybody's interested in this movie because of the superhero connection. The big thing is, it's not a superhero movie. And the only connection to the superhero in this is that he's trying to overcome it. And he hears these voices, and he sort of kind of has a bit of a delusional mind. And I mean, there's one sequence that gets sort of fantastic, and you see it all in the trailer. But ultimately, it's not about Birdman. It's actually the title of the movie. The full title is actually Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance, which is extremely pretentious. And it is a bit of a pretentious movie. I mean, it's about this former superhero actor trying to get some sort of serious street cred as an actor and adapting a Raymond Carver book into a play that he's directing and starring and producing. It's such an odd film because at its heart, it's just the brooding person story. It has nothing to do with superheroes, and it has nothing to do with entertainment, but that's all in the backdrop. So there is a superhero connection, which sort of gets people to talk to Michael Keaton and sort of because of his Batman connection and gets people to ask him questions about it. Same thing. It is populated by people who've been in blockbuster movies and not even superhero. I mean, Naomi Watts is in it and she was in King Kong. These are actors really just doing an independent movie. I saw somebody on Twitter ask, he said, would people be giving such rave reviews for Birdman if it did not have the superhero angle? And I have to say, I don't know if it would. I don't know if people would be going gaga over this if it wasn't about superhero and sort of the fight you have to do as an actor to get past that. But really what it is it's this character study. And in that sense, it's good, but it's an award piece. It's an art film. It's not a blockbuster. And I have a feeling this is going to be horribly mismarketed. Now, it's R-rated, so it has some adult content, language, and that sort of thing. But I have a feeling this is going to turn into one of those things that by the trailer, you think there's a lot more Birdman in the movie than there really is. There's not a whole lot of Birdman, and then there's one scene. Most of the rest of it is this guy struggling with his problems and his relationships. And it's very well acted, and it's very well executed, and it's got a real great energy to it. The pacing of the film is very interesting. I mean, it's a neat movie. You're not going to see anything like it. But, you know, it's one of these films that is very hard to categorize in any sort of truth, but it's very easy to marginalize as a category. And I think it's going to be misread by a lot of people. It might get some award buzz. It's possible. I mean, we're still a little early. I don't think this is going to have the legs that 12 Years a Slave had from Fox Searchlight. But overall, I mean, Birdman was an interesting film. It had some great performances in it. It has some very funny things in there, especially if you've ever worked with actors, because they really nail what it's like to work with actors. And I'm not downgrading actors. I'm not giving a problem to actors. But I spent some time in the trenches of independent filmmaking, having to deal with so many egos and so many artists and so many people. Everyone has their own agenda. It can be very difficult to manage a lot of this, especially as the director. And then in this, he's directing and acting and producing. The world's falling apart around him. So it's an interesting insight into the actor's psyche, and I think that that's what helps all the actors actually connect to the characters. Overall, Birdman kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
I got to go to a break. When I come back, we're going to be talking John Wick and Dear White People. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys in the Movies coming back at you. We are rolling into the first one in this segment I'm going to talk about is John Wick. Keanu Reeves plays a former assassin who is pulled back into the life by some punks in the Russian mafia who steal his car and kill his dog.
I lost everything. That dog was a final gift from my dying wife.
Jonathan, you got out once. You dip so much as a pinky back into this pond, you may find something reaching out to pull you back in.
It's personal.
Where'd you get that car?
What does it matter?
It's not what you did, son.
It's who you did it to.
This is an interesting thing because this movie got a lot of buzz very quickly. And I didn't even know they were making it. I mean, I don't follow too much development news. So obviously, you know, if you're in the know, you knew that he was making this film. But when the trailer was released, it was a big, big deal because everyone's like, oh, it's a violent movie. It'll be awesome. And then it played at Fantastic Fest and went over like gangbusters. And that's great because Fantastic Fest is the kind of festival that loves R-rated bloody entertainment. That's kind of what it was designed for. And that's exactly what you get with this movie. This movie is also very straightforward. There is nothing hidden in this film. It is not like you're going to go see this weepy romantic drama and suddenly get violent, blowing people up. John Wick is about a guy on revenge killing people. That is what the film's about. So if that's what you're expecting, that's what you're going to get. And it's R-rated, and it's very violent, it's very bloody. A lot of people die. They're all bad guys. Inadvertently, it's sort of this weirdly moralistic movie because while there's just brutal killing nonstop, it's all bad guys and gangsters and it's just dismantling the entire Russian mob by one person. So it's a lot of fun in that way. I mean, I'm not to say that it's fun to watch people get killed, but in a movie, in this very safe entertainment, it is. It also has, Keanu Reeves doesn't say a whole lot in the film. My sister pointed out once, back when the Matrix movies were being made, she said, you know what I think made the first Matrix so good is that Keanu Reeves doesn't have a whole lot of dialogue. Most of the dialogue and the long speeches are done by Lawrence Fishburne in that movie, who's a great speaker. Keanu Reeves looks good and he can fit the part, but you really don't want him having a long soliloquy. And he's a man of very few words in this film, and that makes it work. This is a lot of fun, but if you don't want a bloody action revenge movie, don't go see John Wick, because that's exactly what it is. There are some parts in there that the action is a little bit slow. I mean, just some of the there's like two where he's going through and killing all the henchmen trying to get to the guy who killed his dog. And it just seemed very slow to me. It just seemed like overly choreographed. So it's not, I mean, this isn't like watching The Raid, but it has that sort of flair to it. It is what it is. I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun. My mom could see it and she'd hate the doggone thing. It just depends on what you're going to like. So ultimately, John Wick, it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Dear White People. The state of race and prejudice on college campuses is examined in this satirical film.
Dear White People, the minimum requirement of black friends needed to not seem racist has just been raised to 2. Sorry, but your weed man, Tyrone, does not count.
You want to know why they used to call me Black Mitch?
Absolutely.
Nobody called you that.
You've got no idea what they see when they see you.
You've got a thing for Taylor Swift. I know, because my Mac picks up your Mac's library.
We're so careful. You don't understand. Girls like me
have to pick a side.
Dear White People was a big hit at Sundance and very talked about at the beginning part of this year. It's lost a bit of steam. And I don't necessarily think that that's faulting the movie as much as this is not a mainstream film. This is a sort of like Birdman. Birdman's not a mainstream film. Now, what's going to help Birdman is it's got big name actors in it. There's really no one. There's some recognizable faces in Dear White People, like Dennis Haysbert, who played the original president on 24. He's in it. And there's a couple people who might, oh, I saw that. That guy was in that movie that I saw, you know, a couple years ago. But overall, it's an independent film. It's a small group of actors that aren't big names, but they do a very good job with what they do. And I think that's kind of what's kind of lost its steam. Part of it is the title of the movie is aggressive. It's very aggressive. It's Dear White People. And then it has, and you heard in the trailer, there's all these things of, it's sort of like a BuzzFeed videos or these BuzzFeed lists. It's like 21 things that only black people know about white people. And it's all the things that supposedly white people do to black people in this list. I mean, a lot of them I don't like. One of the things they talk about, and I see this on these lists all the time, and they say that's even in the movie, don't touch our hair. I've known plenty of black people in my life. I have never once reached up and touched a black person's hair. I've never felt compelled to do that, and I would find that rude to do to anyone in any situation. But apparently it happens. But of course, like everything, things get painted with a broad brush. And if you listen just to the trailer, it sounds like it's BuzzFeed video, the movie. And it's not. And that's actually a good thing. The main kind of character that this is wrapped around, although it's an ensemble piece, and there's no one person who's the core of the story, but at least the woman who's the core of the trailer, instead of being the angry black man, she's the angry black woman. And, I mean, it's just sort of a swap of a standard character, which is funny because she's a giant stereotype in herself, even though she's raging about everybody's stereotypes. And so they highlight her in the trailer, and it's not all about her. There's other things. There's, in fact, one other character who's a gay black kid with an afro, I mean, a massive afro just because he's growing it out, who doesn't feel like he fits in anywhere. He doesn't feel like he fits in with the gay community. He doesn't feel like he fits in with the black community. He doesn't feel like he fits in with the nerds. He just doesn't know. He's kind of his own person. So he's sort of uncategorized in this college, and that's a huge problem that he's trying to overcome because he doesn't identify with anyone. And then, of course, he sort of gives this cavalcade of stereotyped characters that fit a very specific stereotype. They do it better than, I talked about this with Men, Women, and Children last week, where everybody, well, this one is the bored housewife, this one is the slutty girl in school who talks a big game, this guy is the kid that's addicted to porn. That was last week in Men, Women, and Children. Dear White People does a better job sort of being the satire of all these different stereotypes. But it throws all the stereotypes at you, and it's all the sides. With a title like this, a very aggressive title like this, and a very aggressive trailer, you might be tempted to think that this is just going to come in and say, let me tell you what it's like, white people, because this is what it's like to be black in America. And it doesn't really do that. It has characters that do that. You know, it talks about, you know, do you have a black friend? Does that make you racist? Does it not? I don't, you know, honestly, I've never sat there and counted how many black friends I have. I mean, I have black people that are friends of mine. But I find it sort of crass to sit there and go, okay, well, I got this guy. I know this guy. And I know this guy. Okay, whew, I got two black friends. You know, I mean, I never have done that. I've never done that. And I think, in general, there's a lot of people who don't. A lot of people just are friends with people. If you've got to prove you're not prejudiced, you've got to prove you're not racist, it's impossible to prove a negative. You just can't. And the other thing it does is it directly addresses some of the crazy crap that goes on college campuses. In particular, stuff you see about parties and blackface and racially charged and insensitive practices from very mundane to very egregious. And what's funny is I'm watching this, I realized about 20 years ago I was in college. I was graduating college 20 years ago. But when I was in college, 20 years before, that was the 70s, where you had Black Panthers and it was all crazy. And, you know, you had Kent State was very fresh in everybody's mind. So the same length of time passed between the 70s to when I was in college as from when I was in college to when this movie is out. And I'm watching this thing going, that's the same gosh darn problems that everybody was having when I was in college. And people are saying the exact same things when I was in college, and people are making the exact same arguments when I was in college, good and bad. Like in this movie, some of the characters will complain about Tyler Perry's films and how prejudiced and stereotypical they are, but it doesn't help your case when black people go and see those movies in droves. And it's frustrating if you're trying to enact change, and then the people you're trying to help change don't help you out, you know, and they're your own worst enemy. So I think there's a lot of issues that are brought up. It's not as held together as it could be, but it's still an interesting movie. It's worth seeing, and it's a nice discussion piece. So I'm going to say Dear White People kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, I need to go to a break. Coming back for the final segment, I'm going to be talking about the horror movie Dead Snow 2, Red vs. Dead, the box office, and the world-famous DVD roundup. Rolling on with Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. We are in the final segment. We're going to be talking about one more movie, a bona fide horror movie, horror comedy. I mean, it's still a horror movie. It definitely has horror elements to it. Far more horrifying than anything you're going to see in Ouija. We're also going to be talking about box office and then finally the world famous DVD roundup. But first, let's head on into the final film, and that is Dead Snow 2, Red versus Dead. Zombie Nazis raise an army to continue their mission of destruction, and it's up to some amateur zombie hunters to save the countryside.
Is this the zombie squad?
That is a 10-4, Martin, and we will be heading your way shortly. Listen, Martin, these are not your classic textbook zombies, just hungering to feast on the flesh of man. No, these are most likely cursed zombies, awakened to reclaim something that was stolen from them, or to complete a task given to them.
I remember when Red Snow came out, five, six years ago. It's been a while, but I remember seeing it on Netflix, and it was a lot of fun. It's a Norwegian film. And the original Red Snow, I think it was just in Norwegian, so of course it was in subtitles, and it was a basic Cabin in the Woods story with Nazi zombies instead of evil spirits or anything like that. And of course, it took, because it's in Norway, it was up in the snowy area. And it worked, and it was fun, and it was a bit tongue-in-cheek at times. This one takes the tongue further into the cheek, and it is a kind of a bigger movie. It does more with it. The survivor from the first film, but he had cut his hand off because he thought he was going to turn into a zombie, and doctors have replaced a hand that they thought was his, but it turns out to be one of the Nazi zombies' hands. And that gives him special powers. And he gets together with some American zombie hunters, amateur zombie hunters, to fight this group of Nazis who are going after old Nazi gold. And they have brought back to life other people and zombified them and turned them into zombie Nazis. And they're heading out to just finish their mission, which is to wipe out the countryside, the directive that Hitler gave them 70 years ago. Because it's called Red versus Dead, the heroes go and resurrect a group of communist zombies from the Russian army from the World War II. And of course, the Russian zombies versus the Nazi zombies. You have a big, as I called it, I said to the theater rep who I saw the movie with, I said, this is the Braveheart of Nazi zombie movies. And it is a big fight between the two groups. And it's very bloody. It's ludicrous at times. It takes that sort of zomcom level, but it's not overtly comedy the way, say, like Shaun of the Dead was a little closer to comedy. Fido was a little closer to comedy. It's a little bit more like maybe Dawn of the Dead or Day of the Dead, where it has this sort of somewhat serious stories, but it has this absurdity to it. And the absurdity of killing the zombies and literally ripping the guts out, it's a pretty hardcore movie. It's pretty violent. I mean, it's extremely violent. There's a lot of grisly death by men, women, and children all over the place. It was the kind of movie that makes fun Halloween movies. Now, the first one was in Norwegian. This one's in English. But if you go and watch the trailer online, I think what they did is they shot a lot of the characters in Norwegian and also in English. So it made it a little bit more exportable to the United States and the English-speaking markets, which is good, because part of the problem with watching a movie like this is there's so much action and there's so much blood and so many things flying around and splattering everywhere that it's kind of hard to watch the action and read the subtitles. And there's all, they throw a lot of exposition at you at times and have to explain who the zombies are, who the Nazis are and what they're doing and who these Russian zombies are. So it kind of helps having it in English, at least for an English speaker like myself, which is nicer than the original Dead Snow, which I think you can still get on Netflix. I definitely recommend this if you want something different, and I believe you can get it on demand as well if you can't find it at a local theater. So Dead Snow 2, Red vs. Dead, rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, I said that The Best of Me was going to win with $25 million. I was wrong. I said Fury was actually going to play a little soft, because my thought being, there was a lot of R-rated movies doing well already. Because you had like Gone Girl, you had Annabelle, which is R-rated. I just thought that Fury wouldn't hold up against the people who wanted R-rated entertainment already kind of had that. I was wrong, and I'm glad I'm wrong, because The Best of Me came in fifth with $10 million, which is terrible. This is terrible. It's terrible for a romance. It's terrible for a Nicholas Sparks movie. I'm sure it's still going to be profitable, because these movies don't exactly cost a lot of money to make. But this is one of those times where I'm glad I was wrong, and that's because glad to see Nicholas Sparks as a brand maybe getting some fatigue, which is good, because If I got to sit through too many more of his movies, I'm going to jump off a building. But Fury did well. It was $23.7 million, almost $24 million, which is pretty fantastic for it. Gone Girl only dropped like 33% at 17.5. Book of Life came in just under Gone Girl with $17 million, which is about on the level of what the Box Trolls did. And that's good. So it was, you know, this is a stronger sort of end of the year, even though you're not getting $90 million weekends. You're getting a lot of movies either doing pretty well or overperforming at times. And that's, I guess, good for Hollywood. This week, I'm going to predict $18 million for Ouija. I don't know why I'm picking that. Maybe I got on a Ouija board last night. But, I John Wick's a better movie. And I enjoyed the heck out of John Wick. But it's not mainstream. And I don't think it's going to connect with a mainstream audience. It reminds me of, and I mentioned this in my review, it reminds me of The Raid and The Raid 2, where these were beloved movies from Fantastic Fest, but they failed to make any sort of impact outside of Fantastic Fest, because Fantastic Fest, the crowd for that festival, is the shoot 'em up action crowd. John Wick plays perfectly to that crowd. And that's shown by the fact that going into this week, it had 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is unprecedented. But that's because everybody at Fantastic Fest loved it, because that's the kind of movie they play at Fantastic Fest. By the time it was going into the weekend, it was at about a 90%. It's going to be dropping for a while, and I don't know what's going to end up being by the end of the weekend. It'll probably still be a positive tomato meter movie. It delivers exactly what it promises it's going to deliver based on the trailer. So anyone who doesn't want to see that kind of movie is probably not going to see it. And anybody who does gets exactly what they wanted, and it does it very well. So I'm pretty sure it's still going to retain a positive, fresh tomato meter rating. But, you know, this sort of 100% on Rotten Tomato, that was a front-loaded review from a single festival. And I just don't see John Wick performing terribly well. And Ouija is going to just sort of get the teenage crowd. The biggest problem it's going to have is it's PG-13. And so it's kind of this neutered horror movie, but it's a week before Halloween. So, you know, maybe that's going to help it out. All right, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time for us to roll into the world-famous DVD roundup. Handful of movies. The first one I want to talk about is Snowpiercer. That is out on DVD and Blu-ray. This one it stars Chris Evans, not as Captain America, in a movie about a train that is on a continuous journey. I actually have not had a chance to see it. It's one of those that I missed this summer. I definitely want to check it out. It's got a lot of buzz and did very well in sort of the genre markets. Now, in more wide release type movies, you had The Purge Anarchy, which was terrible. Not terrible, it just wasn't good. There's also The Fluffy Movie, which is Gabriel Iglesias' concert film, which, you know, funny guy. There's also Life After Beth, which is the zombie comedy, romantic comedy, about a guy trying to keep his relationship alive with his girlfriend who's been dead. And it's come back as a zombie. There's Sex Tape, which was terrible, with Cameron Diaz and Jason Segel. This one was not very good. And it was oddly a premonition of the big photo leak of all the celebrities who kept their nude pictures on the cloud. And that's how it leaked. So it's sort of this life imitating art that really happened with that nude photo leak. Which, that new photo leak's probably more interesting than Sex Tape, the film. And then there's Earth to Echo, which is a neat little movie about sort of an Amblin-esque kind of film of these kids trying to help an alien get back home that is completely cobbled by the fact that it's found footage and it looks terrible. There's also, from television, Mad Men, the final season. So if you want to finally wrap that up and put the nail in the coffin on that series for you. And then Pee-wee's Playhouse, the complete series that you can watch in its completion before Paul Reubens actually officially announces a new Pee-wee Herman movie. Stinker of the Week is Raging Bull. It's a documentary about Uwe Boll. And I just have a bone to pick with Uwe Boll because this is about him having boxing matches. Part of it is him having the boxing matches with the critics. And I challenged him through his publicity like 6 years ago at Comic-Con to do an eating contest. He wouldn't do it. The coward. Uwe Boll, you're a coward. Next week is Happy Halloween. I know it falls on Friday and it's going to be in the middle of the weekend that it turns into Thanksgiving time, but it's Halloween weekend next week. And we're going to be talking about Before I Go to Sleep, Nightcrawler, The ABCs of Death Part 2, and Saw, the 10th anniversary release. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.